Thanks for tuning in to this session of Kosher Tidbits, which is part three of our sessions on enzymes and biotechnology. In this session, and in part four, we will cover the kosher issues involved in biotechnology product. A word of caution is in order before we start. To get the most benefit from listening to this session, it is important that you have first tuned into part two of this series of Kosher Tidbits, which covers the production process. Let us discuss the stages in the process and the halachic kosher law issues. The first step is the chiroprotector and valor ampule, which preserves the microorganism. As mentioned earlier, the OU position has been, as well as virtually all other kosher agencies, that as these nutrients only preserve the microorganism and do not assist in growth, we need not be concerned about them. The next stage is the solid agar. As discussed, the microorganism is streaked onto a solid agar. The OU position, and again as well as virtually all other kosher agencies, is that at this point we look at the microorganism as a halachic cow. Just as the food a cow eats do not affect its kosher status, so too we consider the microorganism at this point to be an independent entity and therefore unaffected by the nutrients it eats. There are two relevant halachic issues. If a cow or any animal only subsisted on foods that are not only forbidden to eat, but even prohibited to derive any pleasure from, then such a cow is called mispatma kol yomehel b'yisuri hana, literal translation, fattened all its days with items forbidden to derive pleasure from, and is forbidden for consumption. An example of yisuri hana would be basar b'cholav, which is milk and meat cooked together. According to the Torah, one can not only not consume milk and meat cooked together, but not even derive other usage from it, such as using it as fuel for a fire or using it to feed an animal. In the case of our solid agar, which the microorganism is feeding off of, not only are there certainly ingredients that are not in the category of being prohibited to derive pleasure from, there are definitely ingredients that are completely kosher. That being the case, the microorganism feeding off the agar will not become non-kosher according to this opinion. There is even a stricter opinion, which holds that if an animal was nispatma kol yomeh b'yisuri achila, literally fattened all its days with items that are only prohibited to be eaten, but permitted to derive pleasure from, which means regular non-kosher ingredients, such an animal would be prohibited for consumption. According to this opinion, our microorganism is still acceptable. As we explained previously, the microorganism is given a balanced diet, and therefore the solid agar will always contain certain ingredients such as vitamins and minerals, which are by definition kosher. It will therefore not fit into either problematic category, as even according to the stricter opinion that an animal eating even just regular non-kosher foods is a problem, even those that are not forbidden to derive pleasure from, that is only when the animal's entire diet consisted of these foods. If it ate some kosher foods, which our microorganism clearly did, it is not a concern. Moving along, we arrive at the next stage, which is inoculation of the liquid media. From the liquid media and onwards, through the seed and main fermenter stages, the OU position is that all ingredients must meet kosher standards. We basically ignore the scientific fact that it is a microorganism eating food and the animals producing the enzyme, but rather view the fermentation process similar to the Talmud situation of non-kosher wine turning into vinegar. In that situation, the Talmud is clear that as the original vinegar fermented out of the non-kosher wine, the resulting vinegar is also considered non-kosher. In the enzyme process as well, we ignore the role of the microorganism and view the process as if it's a fermentation taking place, and the result of the fermentation, which is the enzyme or biotechnology product, is considered to have originated from the original ingredients. We view it this way even though the resulting enzyme or biotechnology product, at least scientifically, does not really originate from the ingredients, but rather the microorganism ingests the nutrients and excretes the enzyme. The reason for this approach is based on the principle that the Torah's laws can only be applicable to what's visible to the naked eye. This is an interesting principle, which has far-reaching applications to many different areas of Torah law. In this case, the microorganism's role in the fermentation is completely invisible, and consequently, we only look at the ingredients used to determine the kosher status of the product. Other areas where this principle applies is the famous worms and fish question. If you find worms in fish, it would appear that they should be forbidden for consumption, as they are not from the permitted kosher marine species, as they have no fins and scales. However, the great halachic authority of our time, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, is quoted as saying that it is clear that the worms in this case are clearly permitted. That is because the worms appear to spontaneously be generated inside the fish. Now, scientifically, we know, and Rav Moshe Feinstein knew this as well, that the source of the worms in the fish come from eggs that the fish swallow. And that being the case, they should be forbidden for consumption as they are generated outside the fish. However, Rav Moshe said they are permitted as the eggs are not visible to the naked eye. The Torah will only classify the situation based on what it looks like. And this scientific knowledge that the worms are not spontaneously generated, but rather come from eggs which can't be seen, is inconsequential in determining the halacha. Another famous application of this principle concerns the Talmud and Masechta Tractate Shabbos, ruling that it's permitted to kill lice on Shabbos, on the Sabbath, Saturday. Now, one of the 39 forbidden malachas, forms of labor prohibited on Shabbos, is the taking of life of any living organism. The Talmud permits killing lice as they do not reproduce through sexual reproduction, but rather through spontaneous generation, and therefore are not considered a living organism. In actual fact, we know that this is incorrect, as the louse in fact lay eggs and do reproduce like other animals. However, the Talmud is in fact correct, as the eggs are microscopic, or at least a magnifying glass is needed to see them, and to what's visible to the naked eye, they appear to spontaneously reproduce. So in our case of enzymes, this approach leads to a stringency, whereas concerns the latter two situations we just mentioned of worms and lice, it leads to a leniency. It is a principle that is applied across the board, which will sometimes lead to a more stringent ruling and sometimes a more lenient approach. Now we will discuss what we will call common equipment issues that we deal with in the fermentation industry. Besides the prominent kosher laws pertaining to unacceptable ingredients, for example, non-kosher animals, birds, and fish, and the prohibition of mixing milk and meat, there are kosher laws pertaining to vessels or common equipment. In general, even if a product is totally kosher based on ingredients, it cannot be prepared in vessels used with heat of over 120 degrees Fahrenheit or 45 degrees Celsius that were previously used for non-kosher foods. This is also a concern even where no heat is involved, in a case where a product sat in a tank for more than 24 hours, and in certain situations even for significantly less time than that. These same rules apply to the separation between meat and dairy, whereas a vessel or utensil previously used for a dairy product cannot then be used for meat, or vice versa. As we mentioned in Part 2 of Kosher Tidbits on the enzyme biotechnology industry, we generally start off with a small 1 to 2 liter liquid solution in a flask, which is sterilized prior to inoculation of the microorganism. Sterilization takes place in an autoclave, which is like a pressure cooker, which does a high heat sterilization. The kosher issue is that in most plants of this nature, they need to use the autoclave, and in some situations, the glassware and or metal flasks as well for sterilization of other items. For example, they also need to sterilize the agar plates we discussed in Part 2, and as we mentioned, they can contain non-kosher ingredients. In addition, they need to do microbiological testing. Microbiological testing involves taking a sample from the growing fermentation and putting it into certain solutions to measure for various parameters. One of the common ingredients used is brain-heart infusion, which is clearly not going to be non-kosher. This needs to be sterilized and will almost assuredly use the same autoclave and in some cases use the same glassware, metal flasks as well. So we have an almost definite situation of common equipment usage on the autoclave and sometimes the flasks. In the case of the flask, some companies use different flasks for this type of testing. The approach of the OU, which has been accepted by virtually all kosher agencies worldwide, is to allow this based on the following reasoning. As we discussed, the flask stage moving onward to the seed fermenter is in virtually all cases definitely much less than a nullification amount of Bittel B'Shishim, 1 in 60. The rule of Bittel B'Shishim, 1 in 60, is that in cases where the non-kosher ingredient is less than 1/60 of the total solution it went into, the food is still permitted. As an aside, it's prohibited, however, to do what's called Bittel Ish L'Chadchila, and that is to plan to do this nullification. It is only permitted in the situation of an accidental or incidental occurrence. In this case, there is no intention to nullify, as we're only dealing with possible non-kosher absorption, and its usage by the company can be considered incidental. In any case, there are some exceptions to the Bittel B'Shishim rule, and one of them is where the non-kosher ingredient is what's called a Dover HaMaimed. A Dover HaMaimed is a situation where the ingredient in question is a catalyst in formation of the product. The most prominent example of this, as we discussed in Kosher Tidbits Part 1, would be the rennet in milk to form cheese. If the rennet originates from a non-kosher animal, the cheese produced is not kosher, despite the fact that the rennet is less than 1/60. In this case, even if we consider the contents of the flask to be a dover amimet and as a catalyst in the fermentation, however, the possible non-kosher absorption from the flask or from the autoclave is definitely not functioning as a catalyst and can be nullified as it's less than 1/60. This is similar to a concept discussed in a situation in Shulchan Aruch Yoreh Dayan Simen Kuf Hei 105, where if salt, which had absorbed blood, got mixed into food and is still imparting a salty taste, if it is less than 1/60, the food is still permitted. Now, in general, if a food is non-kosher, even if it's used at less than 1/60, it can still be a problem if it still imparts taste. In this case, even if the food still tastes salty, which means you are tasting the salt, it is still permitted, as the salt in this case is only non-kosher based on the absorbed blood, and the blood itself is not contributing to the taste. In this case as well, any possible non-kosher absorption is not functioning as the catalyst. If the contents of the initial flask are dairy, this would be problematic. If the flask had been used in the past 24 hours for meat, the contents of the flask would be basar b'chalav, milk and meat mixed together, or milk and meat cooked together, in which case they would be considered a complete non-kosher food, not just a kosher food that had absorption of non-kosher due to the principle of chaticha nasas nevela. This means that milk or cheese cooked with meat or in a pot used for the opposite gets the status of a complete non-kosher food. In addition, the contents of the flask are not only non-kosher, they also have an additional prohibition, which applies by milk and meat cooked together, of iser hanah, that one is forbidden to derive pleasure from them. Consequently, any situation where a company needs to use dairy ingredients in an initial flask will need to be dealt with differently. The company will need to have separate labs, autoclaves, and flasks for production and for microbiological testing. This concludes this session of Kosher Tidbits, which is Part 3 on enzymes and biotechnology. We will continue in Part 4 with the kosher law issues involved in biotechnology products. Thank you for tuning in to this session of Kosher Tidbits.